Another funny thing about the Crowley Bill and Ted connection, I don't know exactly why this came about, but looking at the book about Crowley's tarot, the Book of Thoth, where he tries to explain it in more depth, on the first main page of the book after the title page, he has this little poem from the Book of Lies, actually, so it's in the Book of Lies too, and it's titled Wheel and Woa, spelled just like Woa, W-H-O-A, right, with an exclamation mark.
Yeah, whoa.
So, yeah, so he, like, I don't know why he had that phrase in there.
Right, and that the fact that we associate whoa with so strongly with Keanu Reeves.
That's totally a Keanu phrase. And then, again, Book of Lies, the title of it looks a lot like Keanu. So, yeah, that's just ridiculous. And I think Crowley titled the tarot deck, or at least the major trumps, as Wheels. So, yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. Maybe a little quick diversion onto Keanu's name as far as, like, who's behind this whole thing and a little of his life. I try not to get into his personal life too much at all because I don't want to make his life at all negative through making this book. I mean, I'm sure he'll get some people talking to him about it at some point. But his name, Keanu, is actually supposed to be pronounced Keanu, but everyone says it Keanu, which I think is pretty cool because that emphasizes the point that Christopher Knowles also, I noticed in his blog, he also pointed this out, that Keanu very much resonates with the Anunnaki, because the Anunnaki is, I'm assuming you're familiar with the Sumerian Babylonian idea of the Anunnaki.
Absolutely, yeah.
Alien gods who kind of are thought to negatively watch over humankind, but there's, you can interpret the Anunnaki different ways. So the Anunnaki,
they often get associated with the Men in Black or the Agent Smith and all that sort of stuff.
Somewhat, yeah, in more recent times, the Watchers and things. And of course, Keanu played this character in the movie The Watcher, who's dressed in black all the time and always watching people, but that's kind of another topic. So Keanu, Anu is the name of the sky god, who was like the main father god in the sky of all these Anunnaki. And then Ki is Earth Mother, so the name Anunnaki means born of something like born of Anu and Ki. And then you have that whole reversal where Anu is the father and his name's first, and Ki is the mother and her name's second. They pretty much were ruling, or our Sumerian stories of them come from the beginning of the Mayan calendar era that just ended recently. It goes from around 5,000 years from, I believe, August of 3,113 BC or BCE. And it just ended, of course, just this last year or so. The long count calendar system. There's several Mayan calendars, but that's the famous one that ended recently. And so you have the beginning of that cycle, the Anunnaki, and at the end of the cycle you have Keanu reversing that name with the feminine ahead of the masculine. So it's reversing that polarity also, balancing it out for the age of the child. So that's an interesting point about his name that kind of ties to that whole thing. And then later we can get into how Sirius is so tied into the long count calendar procession, the equinoxes thing too.
And are you associating like the key, or, you know, the key is like chi or qigong or
that to some degree too. I mean, this, I plan a second book about the more how-to aspect of this all, and that'll get into the more qigong part. But yeah, qi, definitely the Chinese word for qi. Plus the whole key maker thing in the Matrix. I try to mainly ignore the second and third movies, but they have some interesting syncs too. And then I just watching Excellent Adventure again last night, there's a big thing around at the very beginning of the movie, his father accuses Ted of stealing his keys, and later they realize he did steal the keys, but because he went back in the future, and the keys play an important role at the end of the movie in helping rescue the historical characters and stuff.
The key is the key. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I had this conversation. I watched Melancholia for the first time. I watched it with David Plate. Actually, I went out to visit David Plate a few months ago in California. And he wanted me to watch this movie, and I was like, there's a scene where there's a key where they're hiding, like, the pills that they were going to, like, kill themselves with. And the guy says, like, okay, well, here's the key. And he puts on this bookshelf, and he, like, hides behind, and he says, here's the key. And I'm like, I felt like this was a director saying, this is the key to the film. Like, look at this book. Look where I'm putting this. You know, this is the key. So just to say, you know, this idea of in the Matrix, like when these things get actually used, I hadn't thought about the Bill and Ted one, and it's been a while since I've seen it, but I think that's really important.
Yeah, I'll have to think more about the key in that. I haven't seen the second Matrix movie for a long time, but in Bill and Ted, they hide the key behind a sign by the police office, so I don't know what that means. But in The Melancholia, I haven't seen that yet. I'll have to watch it soon. I've been curious, but it sounds so depressing.
Oh, it's ridiculously depressing. Yeah, it's pretty depressing.
So. Yeah. You kind of leave off with this feeling of that's it. That's what life is? That sucks. But anyways, you said something about Joss Aucklin.
Yeah. So he narrated the movie about Crowley's life that came out a few years ago.
Because I came across that. Yeah, I came across that the other day, but I hadn't seen The Great Beast. So he's the narrator. I wasn't sure if he played like the old Crowley or what.
I don't think he does at all, no. Just narration.
I thought that was wild. Because the only reason I came across it was because I was watching a kid in King Arthur's Court. Some cornball movie, and he had a lot of Crowley, like he's the king, and he's got this, there's like a lot of Crowley stuff in that movie. And then I started looking up and I saw that he was in The Great Beast, and I realized he was the guy from Bill and Ted, and I was like, oh wait, there's something going on right there. But I'm glad you picked up on that. I didn't know he was the narrator.
So Court, another time it's a kid time travel back to King Arthur.
Yeah, that's what happens. The kid falls into like a little sinkhole. It's like a well, and he goes like this little Stargate, and he goes and he interacts with, and it's weird because it's got Kate Winslet in it, and it's got Daniel Craig in it, and it's just like this big hodgepodge of like what the fuck.
That's from a long time ago, right?
Yeah, it was like one of the first movies that either of those guys did. It was probably late 90s, I'm thinking, early 90s, late 90s. It didn't go past that. And, you know, the weird thing is, it's like one of the, it was pre-Titanic and pre-James Bond and everything for Daniel Craig. So it was like, there are two basically unknowns, but, you know, Kate Winslet is like the King Crowley's daughter. And it's just a big bumblefuck. I didn't even like investigate further. I just found the Josh Aucklin stuff, and I was going to bring the Aucklin stuff up, but when I heard you talking about it, I had to make sure that he wasn't Crowley, that him being the narrator is just as powerful to me though. Cause I've looked for that one. I haven't found that searching for the beast yet. The 666. I haven't,
you can find it on YouTube actually, not to encourage pirated material, but it's pretty easy to find out there.
Awesome.
Well, I totally support pirated material. but
he played the king in King Arthur's Court.
He's basically Arthur, I think. I mean,
really, Aucklin is.
Yeah, Joss Aucklin. He's the king, and there's this whole thing where they have to make him a peasant. And the guy, like, there's a big pool of Bill and Ted in there, because it's the whole, you know, he shows them what rollerblades are. He gets them to make like a bicycle and stuff like that. So he's bringing all of the, and of course then Ted and Bill and Ted, they get the medieval babes. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, right.
Medieval on your ass. Right.
Right. And he does, and the kid in King Arthur's court falls in love with one of the younger daughters. So it's the same motif, like wrapped around.
Kid in King Arthur's Court, 1995, and Aucklin plays King Arthur. You are right. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like wearing a big dragon on him, and his daughter's Kate Winslet. So I'm like, huh? As soon as I saw it. And then I looked it up. That was the first time I noticed where Aucklin was, because Aucklin was in a bunch of like movies through our childhood that we probably didn't put two and two together. It was the same person, because everybody knows Bill and Ted. And then he's in like Die Hard 2, not Die Hard, but Lethal Weapon 2. He's like the main diplomatic immunity guy.
Right.
And that's him. And then he's also in like the Ducks movie, the Disney's, what is it? The Flying
Mighty
Ducks.
Ducks or something?
Mighty Ducks. The Mighty Ducks. His name, I think, is also like Joss or something.
The Mighty Duck would be Thoth, no?
Thoth the Duck. That's a good lineage. That would make sense. But he's the main hockey guy. He's the one who supplies them with everything they need for the ice. But anyways, it's just like these weird correlations where the guy kept popping up, and then it takes me two decades to realize who he is, but it's all the same guy.
Yeah, if it wasn't for the Bill and Ted movie, I wouldn't know who he is, even though he's been in so many things.
Right.
It's hard to keep track of it all.
It's really weird. And that's the point. You know, I've kind of taken with my work with Andras and everything has been that you can do this with any actor. I mean, I'm glad that you're sticking to Keanu Reeves and stuff, but you already got, I mean, you're speaking the same language we are. You know how it connects to other actors and stuff. And it really doesn't matter, like, the quality of the actor. Keanu Reeves isn't necessarily considered to be a good actor. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, people make fun of, oh, God, Keanu Reeves movie. I don't really want to watch Keanu Reeves. But they're so, it is infected the pop culture. Like, everybody knows who Bill and Ted is. And everybody and their mom knows who the Matrix or who Neo is.
Yeah.
And so, like, even though we almost make fun of him, he's a very important, like, figure as far as how we communicate to each other. I mean,
yeah. He's definitely really in pop culture. I'm gonna adjust the headset real quick.
Okay. Well, you guys mentioned the Men in Black too. We were talking about this last night because it's like as soon as he becomes Agent Smith, there's a lot of horror stuff in that because in the Matrix 3 he gets his eyes. You know, that was one of Stephen Wilner's points that he made in one of his videos. That's Horus. That's the age of Horus right there.
The single eye, and that and the battle between Seth and him.
Yeah,
Set
and Seth is pretty much the same thing, but
yeah.
But then he has to become when he's fighting Agent Smith. He allows Agent Smith to take over his body. That's the main thing. Then after that, he has John Constantine, where he's a man in black, and he has like the Day the Earth Stood Still, where he's the man in black. It's like he's still the same character after he becomes Agent Smith.
You know, I don't know. If you guys are equating this, I mean, I'm just going to throw something out. I know you know his stuff, but I don't know if you're familiar with a guy, Michael Schacht. He writes it at Gosporn. It's Gosporn. It's like synchro mysticism done with like homoerotic porn. like taking like gay porn and doing synchro mysticism with it, like sort of proving you could do it with anything. And
I would recommend it to anyone.
Well, like I said, it's not why I go. I'm just, he's a great synchromistic.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, great guy too. So I guess my point though is that he focused on this idea that an aspect of the mythology I wasn't familiar with is that there's actually a battle between Set and Horus, where there's this whole angle where they're trying to trick each other into eating their semen. Basically, like, you have to take the seed of the other one into you. And I guess what I'm getting at here is that we have, if you look at the Matrix as a battle of Set and Horus, I think it's really interesting that both, when sort of Agent Smith sort of gums up his mouth, puts that squirmy thing into his stomach that he tries to remove, and then he basically turns around and does the same thing at the end where he has to sort of absorb all the Smiths into himself. I'm just saying, I think there's actually a really interesting angle there that I hadn't thought of it as a Horus set.
You said the seed. Remember, we watched, because there's this whole, the devil, I mean, in Constantine, it's a big deal where they're in that car and they're talking and he's like, wait, the devil has a son too? They're talking about the opposite, the little twins, the baby Jesus and the baby devil, right? The moon child and the savior, Antichrist and Christ, Messiah, so forth and so on. So, of course, he's in the devil's advocate where the devil's trying, he's the devil's son and he's trying to have this redheaded, like half sister of him, bring in this new child that will rule everything. It's the child. It's the Horus baby again. And so there's Constantine where he does that to Rachel Weiss, right? So there's the devil's advocate and then the baby almost comes through again in Constantine. But there's also the scene in the Matrix where the Trinity shot into the stomach, and it's almost the exact same scene. Like Keanu's got his hand on Rachel's belly in Constantine. He actually dips his hand into Trinity, who would be, you know, her name would signify who she is. He pulls that seed out from the man in black too. So it's like the dark seed. It's the dark jism. It's the dark ejaculate from the pistol, you know, that goes into her stomach that he's got to pull out again.
Hmm.
Pulling out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you don't want to have if you don't want to give birth to the Antichrist, you got to pull out.
Just pull out.
Sorry. Jesus Christ. No, I do think, all joking aside, I actually think that's a really interesting point. If it's the idea of pulling out the dark seed, that actually goes straight to the mythology. Yeah, it's like, you don't want that in you. You want, it's a very interesting idea. And what I was trying to say to Will last night was that when we were watching, Will has this idea that, after he, in The Matrix, Keanu Reeves takes on Agent Smith. He absorbs him into him. And then if you look at movies after that, such as Constantine or Day the Earth Stood Still, he's dressed as the Man in Black. So he's saying, basically, if you take those movies as a through line, Keanu Reeves becomes Agent Smith. After The Matrix is over, he now is a Man in Black from that point on.
I'd have to challenge that a little bit. Watching Johnny Mnemonic,
he's the Man in Black in there too.
He also is delivering a pizza at the beginning and says trying to hide his identity. So he says, "Hi, I'm whatever Smith. I forget if it's John Smith or whatever, but he's already Agent Smith there.
But he already is. Well,
Before, but then when he comes, it's more obvious later. It becomes a stronger sync later.
I think it becomes evil Smith afterwards, because Smith is very much tied to the name John and Iwanis, because Iwanis was the fish. Smith teacher god. So Smith, I think he was Smith before The Matrix, and then it kind of transitions over to a different kind of Smith afterwards. Though I guess he's
Funny because...
And even Constantine is also John Constantine.
Yeah, John name, I have a whole chapter that goes so totally in-depth in the John thing. Is John and Jack are equivalent names, and he's Jack several times, and he's currently in a movie in now, Toylands. John Wick. He's been John like 10 or 20 times.
10 or 20, yeah.
Like, if you count the Jack names, it's like over and over and over again. Yeah, Babes in Toyland, so many movies.
Right. It's insane. I remember before I was in sync, Keanu Reeves, the first, and I told Alan this when we were watching your film, like the first thing that my brother and I said, oh man, is this guy going to play another savior? Like the whole savior thing was like one of the first key ins that something funny was about Keanu Reeves, but it's deep. Like, there's a lot of deep shit about him. And I think that there's deep shit about every actor if you really study him. But to me, it's like really blatant and obvious as far as Keanu goes. Keanu.
Yeah, that's part of why I've let myself indulge so much, just primarily in his career, because he pulls so much together more than other actors I've seen in terms of this savior thing and in terms of this whole path thing. So... I don't know other actors as well. Like, if I really looked into Johnny Depp's career, I don't know what I'd find there. But yeah, I mean, there's so many levels of it all. I don't know how we are on time. If you'd like, I could go in a bit more depth into some other particular aspects of the whole Keanu thing, or...
Please, yeah.
Go.
We basically have about a half hour, and I'd like if as much content as you can, you're willing to share. I think it would be really good to give people some specifics.
Okay, I'll dive into it a little faster and skim over a few of the things at least, and go more in depth, but feel free to break in at any time. I'll just kind of go through the chapters of the book in a way. Like, the first one was again about the main savior roles, and it basically about how symbology shows up in just general ways in movies and other ways. And the second chapter gets more into Bill and Ted and the kidnapping the historical characters. We kind of covered that earlier. But then the third chapter is about the darker side of secret societies, as really comes through strongly in Bogus Journey. I mean, not Bogus Journey, Point Break, sorry. So Point Break, you've probably both seen that. And for anyone who hasn't seen it, basically it's this thing where... it's a surfer bank robber film, essentially.
Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, Patrick Swayze is the kind of bad guy, but he's kind of like a cool bad guy. And his name's Bodhi, so that means the enlightened or illuminated one in Sanskrit.
Bodhisattva. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, short for Bodhisattva.
That essentially means
illuminated, so, or enlightened. So I noticed at one point that all the characters in his gang, the ex-president's gang as they're called, because they dressed up as the ex-presidents, their names all sync with different secret societies. One of them's name's Rosie, so he ties in with the Rosicrucians. Another one has this weird name, Nathanael, but it's like Nathaniel, but it's tweaked up enough that it has an A where an E would normally be. And so I realized various things about him, tied him into Nathan Hill, who was a big kind of icon of a lot of the Skull and Bones people. Like George Bush Sr., he always had Nathan Hill statues outside of his house, outside of his college, etc. And also Nathan Hill was really tied to Yale, where Skull and Bones is centered. And there's other Skull and Bones symbology throughout the movie. So you have Illuminati, Skull and Bones, the downside of the Rosicrucians. I think of Rosicrucians as mainly a positive thing, but there has been some really messed up Rosicrucian things, whether it's Sirhan being involved with the Rosicrucian Order and then shooting RFK, or the Order of the Solar Temple did a whole bunch of killings back in the 90s, mass murder kind of stuff. And they consider themselves Rosicrucian, but they definitely weren't one of the nice Rosicrucian groups. And throughout the whole movie of Point Break, it's very Freemasonic and just a kind of cool general initiatory type way. There's like maybe three main initiatory stages Johnny Utah, Keanu's character, goes through in learning how to surf. And the three classic universal degrees of Freemasonry, as you probably know, are called the Blue Lodge degrees. So the ocean becomes the big Blue Lodge. And he's kind of like this Freemasonic initiatory character, and he's trying to get into the really secret thing amongst the surfer initiates, and the really secret group is this closed-in ex-president group that he's eventually finds and infiltrates. And he finds them and infiltrates them through his eventual girlfriend character named Tyler. And Tyler, as you may know in Masonry, is a traditional Masonic role from back in the days when they met in taverns. The Tyler would always stand guard at the door with a sword and keep non-initiated people out. But also the Tyler would test people who wanted to become initiates to see if they could qualify. And if they did qualify, the Tyler would lead them around the lodge and explain the basics to them. So in Point Break, Johnny Utah eventually gets into the group through this girl named Tyler, who's kind of a masculinized girl, the way she's short hair and kind of macho and stuff, still cute and all. I'm forgetting her name right now, but she played Tank Girl. Totally spacing.
Oh, Lori, I know who you're
Petty.
Talking about.
Lori Petty, yeah, yeah.
I love Lori Petty, hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So she totally embodies the role of Tyler. He gets in through her after she tests him repeatedly, and he also lies about his parents dying, so he's almost making himself like the widow's son, which is a common name for Freemasons, though I guess both his parents allegedly died, though later he admits they're alive, but... Mm-hmm. So she and that again, widow's son refers to the Horus role of Isis being the widow. So then she also gives him the tour through the basics of surfing, trains him on the beach before she lets him go in the water to make sure he knows the basics. So again, totally the Tyler role. And even his younger brother in Bill and Ted is Deacon, which is another Masonic role, who also tends to take care of guests in the lodge, where he is given the role of taking care of Napoleon while Bill and Ted are out on their adventures. So yeah, those two characters embody Masonry dramatically. And then also the Masons often claim to have roots in the Templars. The Templars are these seafaring people who allegedly had a huge fleet. So that kind of ties into the surfing thing too. And then John the Baptist and John the Beloved are the two big saint figures of Freemasonry that are tied into lots of the rituals. I won't go into that more in depth right now, but you probably know some of that already. So the ex-presidents who he eventually infiltrates, they're going on dressing up as presidents. So it's this total like secret societies using politicians represented symbolically, and they go and rob banks. So it could be tied to the Federal Reserve System scam, all that kind of thing you hear about a lot in secret society conspiracy fields. an interesting thing about Bodhi is, of course, his name, if you interpret it as meaning illuminated, he ties into the Illuminati, and he's the leader, so it's naturally the leader, the Illuminati leading other secret societies. But Adam Weishaupt, who founded the historical Bavarian Illuminati, when the society got exposed and Weishaupt fled Bavaria or wherever, his second in command was literally named Bodhi, B-O-D-E in that case, looking at works by Terry Mellinson, who has done a lot of scholarly work on the historical Illuminati. That's pretty well laid out that Bodhi was the big guy who took over after Weishaupt left. And Weishaupt, again, means the wise head, so that ties into the name Bodhi also. So it's just weird, all those sinks, and
two heads are better than one.
That, in a way, again, too, yeah. And they both tie into Bodhi. And then and Johnny Utah, when he's being given the tour around the police station by the boss guy, or the FBI station. They talk about the number of crimes that they've solved or that have occurred in LA in the last year is 1,322. And as you probably know, the number 322 is very much the Skull and Bones number. And there's different theories why that is their big number. But that, again, locks them into the whole Skull and Bones thing and the bad side of secret societies. These surfer guys are like acting like they're above the law and they're doing it all for thrills, which seems to be kind of what the secret societies do. They already have plenty of power through their general success and involvement in the basic Freemasonry, but they want even more power and they're playing like a game to really control the whole world. So those are some of the things I see in Point Break. And then there's the whole Mormon thing too, where they have the whole connection to Freemasonry, or at least the Royal Arch Lodge. And the Royal Arch, a lot of their symbology points to Sirius in particular. And even surfboards, like in the picture, have it depicted as the surfboard looks like the shape of the coffin from the third degree ritual, as I think showed up in one of your books, right, Alan, as in the comic you did. So those are some of my basic takes on Point Break and how it connects to the secret society symbolism. I go more in depth into all that, but that's the basics.
So that's like a whole chapter right there?
Yeah, yes. So that's,
and then what
like
comes
all
next?
All the pictures I have are kind of like chapter opening pictures. The next one is the Kabbalah part. So going back to Bill and Ted and Bogus Journey, and we talked a little about that earlier, but I'll get into a few more of the details of how
I'm curious
Kabbalah
your
shows
thoughts
up
on Circle K.
Circle K, yeah, that's again totally Kabbalah. Plus it even matches Keanu's name if you look at it as Ki Anu, Anu being the sky god, which is usually depicted as a circle, and then the K being Ki. So it doubles up on that meaning. Plus Kabbalah is a K, and then it's made, this tree of life's made up of all the spheres, and this, and the paths that connect them go in these three main angles that are kind of depicted in the K. So Circle K has so many resonances. Of course, it has a double Circle K on the doors of the store, so it's a 22. And then K is the 11th number, so you have the connection to Crowley again through his Thelema being real big on the number 11.
K2.
And K2 again. And I haven't studied a lot about Vedic astrology or Jyotish, where they have K2 being one of the moon nodes that's so important, K-E-T-U, spelling in that case. But that might have a whole other sink. And then if you look at the Dogon tribe, how they depict Sirius in their symbolism, it's basically, it's something between an X and a K within a circle. So you have Sirius as the
circle K
in that
sense. Shut the fuck up. Have I seen this before and forgotten? That's,
like,
is that
in Robert
true?
Temple's book and other ones, you can see that. I depict a little bit in the chapter about Sirius. So yeah, this whole Sirius thing ties in there too. And again, Sirius being at the center of the Tree of Life, and a lot of, like, Dion Fortune and others talk about Sirius being the main celestial body tied to Dot, or Doth, or however you say it. Rufus, again, is like a dog name. Barksdale is another later Keanu character where it's a dog character. And then you could get into the Patrick Swayze side role. A little before he passed away, he kept on determinedly playing in the series The Beast, which of course is a Crowley sink, and his last name is Barker or something, and his partner's name is another dog name. There's all these sinks in The Beast that he played in before he died.
I know in Egyptian mythology Anu is the sky god, but do you ever play with Ki Anu as like Anubis, like the dog?
Yeah, I mean, Anu comes through more so in, I believe, just in Sumerian things, but there's a lot of related names in Egyptian mythology. And yeah, definitely Anubis, Anukis, there's all these Egyptian gods that are in various ways tied into Sirius. Robert Temple, I don't know if you've read his Sirius Mystery book. It's a very complex book, very scholarly in a way, but kind of out there in other ways too. I'm not sure if I believe in all of his conclusions, but he really gets into Anubis and how Anubis early on was about related to a orbit of a planet, I believe, or something like that, or the I forget if it's a circumference of a planet, and how it has a dark side and a light side, and various ways that ties into Sirius, and how it ties into the dark goddess Nephis, who was like the twin goddess of Isis, who's usually tied to Sirius. So yeah, you can go on and on in the Anu connection and how it shows up in Egyptian god names.
And you carry that right over into Kabbalah with like the hand, like the Shekinah and the handmaiden. I think of Bill and Ted's stepmom as like where she's kind of, she's sometimes the mother, and some, she's like, you know, what does he call, like the prostitute or the whore, you know, it's like, is she the one you want to have sex with? Oh no, now she's my mom.
Yeah,
oh, okay,
that's
now
a good
she's
call.
My mom, and now the other guy wants to have sex with her. So it's like,
and even
she's also the one who sends him to hell too, to meet the beast.
Yeah. Interesting. read in her seance group. And the name Missy is such a general kind of feminine archetype name. And I think of the Shekinah and the princess type character really being tied into the base of Firoth Malkuth, because she's been sent there in the usual form of the tree. But she's also definitely tied to the Bina, the top feminine sphere also. Let's see. That's a lot of material there. Missy, if you'd like, we can get into the chakra connection of where Missy shows up as the doll that's thrown into the river at the very beginning of River's Edge. Let's come back to that later, though, because that has...
Okay, wait, there's a doll named Missy, but it's...
Yeah. Yeah, Keanu's younger brother is really bratty, and he tosses the baby sister's doll, Missy, into the river at River's Edge. Like in the picture I did on River's Edge, it shows at the bottom of the picture where there's the dead girl next to the river, and then there's a doll in the river, and then there's a blow-up doll that was Dennis Hopper's girlfriend in River's Edge, and who gets thrown into the river at the end of the movie. So it's all these empty, kind of dead or discarded feminine archetypes being thrown into the river at River's Edge. And River's Edge is really where the whole Keanu cycle mainly starts. He did other earlier semi-significant movies, but River's Edge, again, was where he really became a known figure.
Oh, there's stuff there, I guarantee you.
Oh, totally, totally. Crispin Glover, too. And it's like the
beginning
Crispin? Of the cycle.
We were just talking about Crispin. He's got a movie with Crispin?
River's Edge. He's a little bit like the buddy slash bad guy.
Oh, okay, because I've never seen River's Edge. I'm listening to you talking about it, and it's kind of interesting.
It's a lot of archetypes. It's based on a real-life story. We can divert to that for just a second, because time-wise, it really is the beginning of his cycle, but I don't get into that into the book until after covering the speed chapter, because I wanted to bring everything up to speed, not to make a pun there, but because speed
Wait a second. So who's the one who kills? Okay, this is the plot summary for River's Edge. A high school slacker kills his girlfriend and shows off her dead body to his friends. However, the friend's reaction is almost as ambiguous and perplexing as the crime itself.
Yeah.
So Crispin Glover's the one who kills his girlfriend?
Actually, he isn't, but he really tries to stick up for the guy who did kill the girlfriend. The guy who killed her is a pretty well-known actor. He's had several roles since then, but not as big as Crispin Glover or Keanu. Daniel Roebuck. Yeah. So yeah, it's a weird blending of characters and symbology in that. There's seven main friends, so they, to me, represent the seven chakras. The girl who's killed at the beginning with the red hair kind of ties into, I guess, Devil's Advocate in a way, too, that way. But she's represents the Kundalini, and in the image I have her, the Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, because to me it's the same basic story of the chakras depicted symbolically. The sleeping girl in the case of Snow White, and the dead girl in the case of River's Edge. But River's Edge connects throughout Keanu's whole career. It's this
sleeping
gradual
girl.
Ascension. Yeah,
sleeping girl is Jennifer Connelly. She has a lot of. I mean, she's in
like Labyrinth.
Well, it's Labyrinth, but it's in Dark City. She's always asleep, you know.
Right,
she works at this.
It's
like the Book of Dreams or something like that. And then she's in, what is the other one? The Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, it's Narcotics, it's Narco or the Sleep or whatever. It's like that's a. So I mean, the Sleeping Beauty archetype is already kind of bouncing around him already. So that's cool that you mentioned that, because that fits to me. That
and then they're
sense.
Together in The Day the World Stood Still, right?
She's and I saw this Crispin Glover movie the other day, came on HBO, called Drop Dead Sexy, where he and Jason Lee have a dead girl that they travel around with. They're like hiding this dead girl, and Crispin Glover's like keeps winding up in bed with this dead girl. And it's such a shitty movie and so oddball. And it's just weird, because that's a direct lineage between Crispin Glover and that theme as well.
Weird. Yeah. And tries to kill a lot of girls in Charlie's Angels with then Drew Barrymore and the whole Babes in Toyland role and stuff.
I see.
And then Keanu was in a little known film they seem to kind of have tried to hide called Life Underwater with what's the girl from Sex and the City who plays Carrie? I'm really not a fan of that series.
There's a lot of water going on right here. I mean, with the Point Break and
again, the John the Baptist thing with all the John roles goes through it all. That's
you think
mainly,
that he is John the Baptist? He's the one who comes before the Messiah. Then he's the one who announces the Messiah or baptizes.
He's both. I mean, he does the John the Baptist thing up until the Matrix, and he takes on the Jesus role more. He switches over at that point from all the duality into the. And some people argue that John the Baptist is the true savior. Like
I was just gonna say, and in the Masonic tradition, there's an argument that the Masons actually think John was the true Messiah.
And then that would make a lot of sense with all the Masonic symbolism that's hovering around Keanu. He would be a more Masonic interpretation of and John Constantine, he would be both. JC would be Jesus Christ and John at the same time.
Again, that's post Matrix, so he's taken on that more completely. If we get into Johnny Mnemonic, that's where the John versus Jesus thing really gets more intense. And it really is one of the peak. When he has title John roles, or even close to that, like Johnny Utah, John Constantine, and Johnny Mnemonic, those are all his most obvious dramatic baptism roles. And Johnny Mnemonic, the Yakuza trying to catch him and cut off his head like John the Baptist's head was cut off.
Yes, that's so perfect.
And Constantine, he drowns / baptizes Michelle Weiss to give her her psychic powers again. And
there's a lot of water in that movie.
And the other one, Johnny Utah in Point Break, he's baptizing constantly in the ocean. And again, the Mormons are really into Masonry and the whole John the Baptist thing too. When Utah being the Mormon link there. But let's see, I'm losing track here.
Utah also has a big connection. I don't know if you're familiar with a guy named Freeman. He does this chain of thought through Utah as being like, you mentioned Keanu as Anunnaki. There's a place called Ogden, Utah, and Og was the biblical giants, the Anunnaki, so it's like the Ogden. And he talks of this idea of like being a sort of, why would they name this after, you know, the fact that Utah has all these Zion National Park and et cetera. So even just having the Utah in itself is very loaded.
Weird.
Well, there's two new John movies coming out too, on a sidetrack. His one of his newest movies that came out in 2001 was called Generation
Yeah, he plays John again.
Right, that's just simply John. And then there's another one coming out this year where he plays John Wick.
Yeah, I forget the exact number of John roles, but it's pretty crazy. And yeah, he was recently on Reddit to do the Ask Me Anything a few months back. And someone asked him about that, and he actually had admitted he was beginning to wonder about that too. Because yeah, just having currently acting in the John Wick role, it's pretty ridiculous. And again, Jack and John are essentially the same name. He played Don John, he played just a weird name called Jax or Jax in the
Filling Minnesota. Yeah,
it's just pretty ridiculous.
Jax Clayton, which is another JC.
Right, okay. I got to get into the initial study a bit more.
Come on, man, that's the easy shit.
And Gematria, I got to get into more today, too.
Trust me, I mean, like I said, just looking over your stuff, it's really clear for me to see that you... maybe if you don't mind, I want to kind of take this back to where we started. It seems really clear to me that you speak the same language we speak. You know, if that makes it, or you're thinking.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I love this stuff, all that.
So I'm curious, you know, Will asked at the beginning, at what point did you get into this? You said you had seen some, Wilner and Kotze videos. Have you encountered anything else that's kind of, you said, you know, what you're doing isn't straight synchromysticism, but it's in the same family, if you will.
Yeah, I think it basically is synchromysticism. It just essentially is.
Right. I was just curious if there was anything else that had spoken to you or anything else that you had seen that people were doing that was kind of like this that we should be aware of, or something you appreciated that the sync people were doing.
Good question. I mean, yeah. I mean, there's a few in town. You might already know them, but I just lost my train of thought. I mean, it seems like, well, astrology seems like the earliest form of synchromysticism in a sense, but I had some good answer there. But my local friend's friend Jack, who goes by Amon Ra, he has an interesting thing on Star Wars, but it's more so about the underlying socio-political things that are so much different than they seem on the surface. And it's really a brilliant expose he does called The Skywalker Paradigm. And another friend named Ian, who I know is at least friends with Jake on Facebook, but he does a thing called the DeSmurfy Code. It starts out with a lot of the Smurf symbology, like the blue skin and the mushrooms and things, and then it gets more into a focus on the Holy Grail and how that's depicted as a kind of pineapple-looking thing and so much sculpture, and that becomes the main focus of his work. But he's done some deep essay, deep writing and video on that. But the Keanu Mandu site from back in the 90s was the the first thing outside myself that is tied to all this. I'll get back to you on that question. I'll email you if I think of more things that are related to that. And there's a lot of other themes I want to go off on someday, like a lot of Holy Mountain stuff and Oz related things and Kennedy assassination, etc. And even Game of Thrones, I see so much sinks in that that I haven't seen people talk about yet.
I would be happy to talk about Holy Mountain any day, and you know, our
JFK,
normal, yeah,
Oz.
All those things, yeah, Oz.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, yeah, all these things, and obviously today's episode is going to be episode 77, which is Oz.
Oz, right, right.
So you know, yeah, it's today we didn't really mention Oz, but it's there.
So. The Crowley part, especially, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like the name Theodore is. Just Dorothy in verse. It's both Dorotheos, Theodoros, gift of God in each case, or adoration of God. So you have the whole Oz thing. I mean, and then Thelma and Louise, or Thelma and Louise, that's a very Crowleyan thing. They're following their will, and then I think that's Brad Pitt's first appearance, and there's a scene where he's jumping up and down on the bed in a hotel saying, come on, let's play a game. I'm the great and mighty Oz. Who are you? So he starts out as the great and mighty Oz in the whole Thelma thing. Which is kind of a female version of Bill and Ted in a certain way. I mean, that whole buddy thing, it's a big...
And they also drive off a cliff.
Right, right, like in Rush.
Oh, wow.
crazy, crazy stuff out there. The, and I haven't followed each of their careers, Angela Davis and everybody, but...
Gina Davis and Gina Susan Davis. Sarandon, is that right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I just watched before I left to the East Coast. I watched Beetlejuice, and that also has Gina Davis falling off a cliff,
right?
With a dog. They're dangling off the cliff. They drive the their car crash at the beginning. They drive off the bridge and they're dangling there. And there's just this dog that's like standing on the plank. So they are literally at the fool card, and then the dog steps off, and they drop into the river.
There they go.
And
she was also in Earth Girls Are Easy, where there's this weird Rama blue-skinned alien.
Jim Carrey.
That falls. Right. With Jim Carrey's in it, yeah, that's true. And then also Jeff Goldblum, who she shows up again with. Like, anytime actors and actresses like join powers again, or you see them in the same shows.
With our powers combined.
Right, it's a pull. It's like there's like a swirl where they relive the same thing, and it's getting more obvious. Like there's that new movie coming out. I think it came out yesterday, Winter's Tale, with Russell Crowe and Jennifer Connelly, and of course Jennifer Connelly showing up with Russell Crowe again this year in Noah. That's like two
Who's
roles
Noah's
back
wife.
To back. Right, it's like ridiculous.
And Bill and Ted, they say, well, who was Noah's wife? Jennifer Connelly.
Right.
She is his wife in that, right?
She is Noah's wife. And it's weird because they know it's the floods. And if you've ever seen Dark City, which is very related to The Matrix, that's the end of Dark City when all of the humans get their memory back. All of the waters open up because the aliens are scared of water. And of course,
Wicked Witch.
Right. Oh, that's a good point. The Wicked Witch of the Oz is that's how they destroy her is with water. But, I mean, there's a... The Dark City in the last movie of The Matrix, there's like a scene in there where there's like the exact same scene. They're fighting men in black flying up in the air, and there's water and there's rain, and it's the same shit over and over.
It looks like we're running out of time. That makes me think of one central point I should probably at least briefly mention, getting back to the Lactic Center, George Carlin, et cetera thing. That the main interface, intersection with the, or closest alignment to the Lactic Center in this pass through of the calendar was actually 1998, which would have been December 21st, 1998. That was the most central alignment of the Lactic Center. And so opposite of the Lactic Center is Sirius, which is framed by, depending on how you look at it, either the what astrological system you're approaching it through, tropical or sidereal, you have that framed by either the twins Gemini, which again is the twin thing that you see so much in Keanu's career, or Cancer, which is 69. So that's another interesting little correlation, galactic center on one side, Sirius on the other, framed by the twins or the 69. And that alignment again was in 98 or 99, where you have 13th floor existens, again, Dark City and The Matrix all coming out. They're all essentially the same movie, Question Reality.
And
1998, powers. I've only met a few people who this made sense to, but I've had this weird feeling that I can't really explain well, but my whole life, since 1998, that something shifted in time in 1998. And I actually, like, I was listening to some weird, I don't know, kind of coast-to-coasty interview with a guy who claimed to develop time travel technology. And some woman calls into the show and goes, "Hey, by any chance are you aware of something happening in 1998? And he goes, "Oh, it's funny you ask that." Because he goes, "I get asked that all the time, specifically about 1998. And even with Keanu, I think of, obviously, his time travel role in Bill and Ted. But even in The Matrix, there's a time travel element where he says, like, it's a glitch in time. We perceive something being changed as a glitch in time. And it's the same kind
That's Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, I didn't realize I stole the keys because I hadn't done that till the future. But it was already done.
Yeah.
I didn't realize I was Lake Agent House. Smith. I didn't realize I was going to become Agent Smith because I'm not going to do that for another 15 years or something.
And the Lake House, they're off by 2 years from each other, Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves' characters. So it's a time travel film,
oh
too.
Oh, my God, I did see that. I know exactly yeah,
You know that film now?
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
because it's weird because on the poster he's like, it's Sandra Bullock and then it's him. And he's like gray or dark, you know what I'm saying? Like he's the ghost, he's not really there, which is exactly what happens when they die in Bill and Ted. They become like
faded.
Gray
ghosts.
Yeah. It's messed up.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, we are pretty limited on time if we want to end at 11. I could totally go off on other topics, but I thought it was important to get that galactic center alignment thing with the Matrix.
You
want to
go ahead and get something off of your chest, go ahead and do it now. That's a good idea.
I mean, I'm sure we could go on for two more hours the way we're going, but maybe I'll talk just a couple sentences on each of the basic chapter themes to make sure at least they've all been introduced, but yeah, so leaving off with the
bogus
journey.
You had gone through a couple of them, and you had gotten to the Point Break chapter, I think.
Or I think we got past that. Bogus Journey is the next one. It's so the, like when they're playing the games with death, they play Twister, they play Battleship, they play Electric Football, and
you shank Battleship,
and the Tlu. So each of those games matches the four elements of the four worlds of the Tree of Life. And the particular numbers they use, like the number they use to sink the battleship is, I believe, J7. So that matches from the bottom of the Tree of Life, the seventh sphere up is Jupiter, is equated to Jupiter, and it's the seventh sphere and all that. So there's all these correlations of the particular numbers in Battleship as well as the colors they put their hands on in Twister. And And Electric Football more just generally emphasizes the earth plane. And then Flu is all about fire things, the candlestick, the other characters using the candlestick. So it's the four worlds depicted of the Tree of Life there. But let's see, what are the... And there's other specifics that match the Sephiro throughout the movie that I'm forgetting right now. But an interesting thing that made me realize is that when they... the order they kidnap the characters in the first Bill and Ted movie, the historical characters matches the Sephiro of the Tree of Life. Like the order when they kidnap Genghis Khan, would be the Sphere of Mars, and which is of course the warrior, and then Abraham Lincoln right after that is the Sphere of Jupiter, which is the enlightened ruler, etc., etc. And Freud matches the Mercury one; he's all the brainy guy. The artiness of Beethoven is the Venus sphere. I won't try to explain that now. It switches around a dot though. They start with Napoleon and then Billy the Kid, and then Socrates all match the top spheres. Then it switches around to the bottom sphere after they pass through Doth, because that's when they go to the future world, which is more Doth. I won't try to get into that now, but that seems to be what's happening. And when they go to hell, they meet the Easter Bunny that has this on Ted's case about the eggs he stole from his brother. So the eggs, to me, I depicted them as the Tlifo of the shells. And I think even Jeremy or Violator, I think, goes into one of his recent blogs was about the eggs being the Tlifo in another sense. And then when I recently watched Full Metal Jacket after listening to your first recording of this program about Kubrick. Where you're talking about Full Metal Jacket matches Holy Mountain as the Tlifof realm, which totally makes sense with Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey because they have the Colonel Oates having them do infinity push-ups in hell, just like the drill sergeant.
Oh, yeah.
Very Full Metal Jacket scene, yeah.
Later on, they're walking in the battlefield, and the leader of the squad sees this stuffed animal of a rabbit, and he picks it up and gets blown up. So that's the rabbit that's chasing Ted in the Tlifof realm and Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and that kind of it's like a totally... matched up again. And Bogus Journey did come out after Full Metal Jacket, so maybe it was consciously imitating it. I don't know. But anyway, so leaving that chapter beyond, then the Speed chapter focuses again kind of repeating the structure of Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, the Heaven Realm, the Earth Realm, and the Hell Realm. They start out in the skyscraper, and the floors that elevator falls through when the bomb set off by Dennis Hopper's character. At first ends up on the 32nd or 33rd floor, and then when the next cable is blown out and crashes down to the 22nd floor where they get rescued. So essentially it's, you know, there's the 32 paths or 33 paths of the Tree of Life and the Kabbalah. So they're going down from the top one, Keter, down to Malkuth in that elevator fall. Then they have the 22 earth plane paths to deal with it after that. And so that's like the fall from heaven down to earth. And the majority of the movie takes place on the earth plane, where everything's accelerating because of the 2012 speed up, like Terrence McKenna and people all talked about, which seems to have mainly been set off in 99 when things really got accelerated after that primary alignment. And I experienced that too in terms of my own life, things waking up more and speeding up.
Speed.
So then, and the number 50 is real important. It shows up in the 50-year storm at the end of Point Break, the 50 miles an hour they have to keep to in speed, and the 50-foot jump they have to make in speed, and then it shows up again in a subtle way in the Matrix, along with the number 69 again. And the number 50 didn't make much sense to me. I mean, it's a kind of common number in the sense of just being half a 100. But then when I read Robert Temple's The Sirius Mystery, he keeps on over and over again emphasizing how 50 is so important to Sirius and allegedly ties to a Dogon tribe that happened every 50 years. And it's because Sirius A and Sirius B flip over each other every 50 years. And they're rotating around each other and they flip every 50 years. So the time thing of the 50-year storm, And the 50-year storm kind of wipes out the Illuminati. It's all this illumination energy coming back from Sirius that then makes it impossible for the secret societies to maintain their secrecy and their rule over things. And we have that happening more in a key way now in the last 2 or 3 years with the square angle between Pluto and Uranus. I mean, between Pluto and Uranus, where Pluto is in Capricorn, more the system-related sign of the zodiac, and Pluto's the literal plutocracy, the hidden wealth, power, people, and that's opposed in the square to Uranus, which is the planet of rebellion and revolution, and it's in Aries, the sign of the warrior. So you have all the Occupy stuff happening, the Edward Snowden stuff happening, et cetera, even Bitcoin, even a Kickstarter itself. I see as a symptom of this astrological alignment, and that's the part of the whole revolution and galactic alignment that's so key to the 2012 years in particular, because it's this revolution turnover. And I think it's still happening for another half year, another year. So I'm hoping more things will happen beyond the Arab Spring and Occupy movement, that it'll be more of a complete revolution happening.
Well, within that of things that we would hope for, tell us about your Kickstarter. I know, obviously, there's not a lot of time left for it, but maybe you can give us some information for how people can support it or what your plans are moving forward, whether you make your goal or not.
Yeah, thanks for asking that. It does look fairly unlikely. It's been going on for about 45 days, and it had a good start, but then it kind of petered out because I just wasn't getting the response from different mainstream media I was trying to reach out to. I mean, I'm really happy about this connection because this is the perfect audience, the perfect connection, and just fun. part of it, I think I realized my heart wasn't fully into it because I was trying to hurry it up to make it tie into 2013 itself. I started it just on the very edge of 2013, the actual Kickstarter campaign. But without going into my regrets on my lack of preparation in some aspects, the campaign is to fund the printing of the book as well as helping me finish the last 10% of the book. So with printing, of course, as you know, the more books you print, the better the cost. And the amount I went for was basically $15,000, which is a lot in a way. There's been much huger Kickstarter campaigns, of course, but that would allow me to print a good, I think, 3,000 or so copies for a reasonable cost, and I can sell them for a lower cost. And things like print on demand just demand a much higher per book cost. Maybe I should have sent the goal lower, and I'll attempt it in some way again if this doesn't work.
You know, this is a conversation for another time, but we keep having this conversation. I see people do Kickstarters, and the numbers seem high at first, but when you think about it, like, you met Steve Wilner. I don't know if you've met Ezra Sanzerbel also.
Almost, but not quite.
Okay. The two of them did a Kickstarter. I don't know.
Or I think they did an Indiegogo kind of thing.
Sure. But. Okay. Yeah. Maybe it was an Indiegogo. Point is, they were asking, I think, about 20,000. And a few people were commenting, like, wow, that's so high. And you think about it, though, is if you're working on something for a year, you know, $15,000 a year salary is not a very high salary. Before you even spend money on printing, spending 20, and then those were two different guys. So if it's $20,000 between two guys, that means they each had $10,000 a year for a year's worth of work, is still really not a lot. Like, that's very, very little to live on. Or invest into resources. So I think this is a conversation for a future time, but I think people, we're of a generation, and maybe a lot of us have a weird aversion to money or just all sorts of things. We maybe don't have money. I know I don't, certainly don't have $15,000. But it's the idea that we see these numbers and we're like, wow, I can't believe someone's asking so much. But you know what? If you really think about what goes into all these things, I think we need to get over that and realize that those numbers, in reality, should probably even be higher. That we should be, able to support our artists and people who are doing interesting work. So like I said, that's a bigger conversation for another time.
Yeah,
I just wanted to, like, don't say that number's high, because if you break it down, it's really not.
Yeah, so, I was really hoping that I'd exceed that number. I mean, I still hope to eventually succeed in that, because 15,000 would still be cutting it kind of close in terms of just keeping myself going with living expenses, and considering the thousands of hours and literally thousands of dollars I put into this project, it would be good to come up with even more. So I still would encourage people to contribute to the project if they're at all interested. Again, the odds aren't too high that it'll make it. I'm up, last I checked, around 3,500, which is great by itself, but not all that close to 15,000.
Is this an all or nothing campaign?
It is, with Kickstarter. Yeah, that's the one downside of Kickstarter. But for a book, I wanted to either... I didn't want to be responsible for making the book if I didn't raise enough to do it at an economic level, an economically feasible level. So I could still, I mean, I could still have offered books by print on demand, but I've also gained a bit of debt from working on this so much the past couple of years, so I didn't want to put myself in too tight of a financial squeeze. My thinking now is that probably won't make it this time, but I plan on attempting it again. Probably within a year, I'll move the book itself further along, I'll make the website more complete, and establish more connections with some media people. I just really held off on getting the project out there at all until I could get it all out there, so I didn't have a good pre-established presence online, which I really would have been wise to have established.
Sure, yeah. That's one more thing to point out. You had sent me a sample chapter. You have a website that has excerpts and sample chapters. What is that website? Because that was fucking incredible. So like,
thanks,
I want
thanks.
People, I'm serious, anyone listening to this, we're going to put the link in. He's going to give the information now. Just check out this sample section and you'll see. I think this is the future of, it's very similar to what I've been trying to do with Suicide Kings, where it's like something that really fully encapsulates the background information, the esoteric context, but walks you through it. I think really, really well done. I hope everyone will check this out. What's the information?
Thank you so much, Alan. That website is kind of the smaller website. It's made just as a short-term support for the Kickstarter campaign, though I'll keep it going. That one's KeanuCode.com, just the basic book title, just KeanuCode.com. And that was actually a section of a chapter, maybe a fifth of a chapter or so on the serious chapter, if it's the one I'm thinking of, where it explains the basic serious symbology in Keanu's career with some images and things. And I don't know if you checked out the other one that was a blog entry. That's on the other website, which is the more major website, and it has a lot of examples of the how-to of the meditation elements. That, and it's still very much under development, but that one's called neo-buddhism.com. So instead of, it's basically like neo/Buddhism, but it's neo-Buddhism with a D. And that's .org actually instead of .com, since it's the more nonprofit side of it all. And that is planned to be a very elaborate website. If you go to, you'll see there's hundreds of pages planned, just not all of them have content yet. But that has a blog also, and there's a blog. My only real serious blog entry on there yet is, again, about serious, but it's mainly about Gary Oldman, who we were talking about earlier, and how his career symbolizes serious so many times. I mean, the Serious Black, of course, is the most clear example.
Blatant.
And then in Fifth Element, he has the dark sun that he's talking to, the dark planet that kind of matches. To me, he really resonates with Sirius B, the darker of the two dog star halves. But he also plays Sid Vicious, which literally means evil star, dark star.
You
translate Sid as sidereal. And there's a few others. And of course, in Dracula, he shows up as a wolf/Batman character. And normally you don't see Dracula as Wolfman, but he shows up there. And he's mirrored, as you probably noticed watching that recently, like when Keanu and Winona Ryder are getting married, they're having a total mirror scene of the Dracula character having like an evil carnal marriage thing too. So he's very much like a twin of Keanu Reeves in this serious A, serious B type sense. But that's a whole other thing to get into. So that website will be the more elaborate one over time, the Neo-Dudism site. And it'll have the blog growing. It'll have more and more instructions. Right now, it only has a few basic meditation instructions and a few basic Qigong instructions and a bit of basic Buddhist philosophy beyond be excellent to each other and no way and wake up and concepts like that. And some kind of fun definitions of dude in the spiritual context or words like babe and things too. So thanks for asking about that. And the Kickstarter campaign, I would ask people if they're interested to even just contribute $1, and that if they want to be notified of future campaigns or to email me through the websites. And if there's still a chance I could make it, if there's enough people listening to this who are enthusiastic about it, who knows? And maybe there's a celebrity waiting out there just watching to see if there's enough popular support. Maybe they're ready to contribute a couple $1,000 or more. I don't know. It could happen. If it does happen, I'll be happy and go for it. Otherwise, what my current plan is, if it doesn't come through this time, is to make a series of smaller books that I've have on the in the works for a while that are related to some of the subject matter of the Keanu Code book. I actually am probably going to launch a yoga coloring book project that I've been working on pretty soon, because it's something that I see as super marketable, the way yoga is so popular. And that'll allow me to build up an audience over the next year or so, that and a couple other books related to it that I have planned. Kind of a whole different thing, but yoga and meditation and the chakras do tie into this a lot. So that's what I'm currently thinking as a fallback strategy. And then I'll hopefully bring that audience to synchromysticism, because I really would like to see more and more people becoming aware of just the amazing material you have out there on synchromysticism. I mean, the work you guys have done is astounding me, all these podcasts and videos and so if I can help get the word out on that, I think that would be...
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, welcome. Totally. Welcome. I mean, I feel like a big part of this is, you know, without sounding culty or anything, like it's the idea of finding the others is an expression that gets used a lot, right? It was the Timothy Leary, find the others. And I feel like we are finding people who are at least speaking the same language. And if nothing else, like I said, I'm definitely not any kind of cult into any kind of cult thing or any kind of dogma, but just the idea of having someone that you can speak to and have this conversation where the other person understands what you're saying is so important.
Yeah.
You know, before anything else, it's just like, you know, I've been at Will's, I came to Will's house last night, I've just been here, and just being able to speak to somebody and say, blah, 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 and that, not have them look at you like you're crazy or look at you like they have no idea what you're talking about. It's just, oh, yeah, of course. And then just snap back and forth. I feel like that's a really unique thing, and so you feel free to hit us up anytime. You're welcome back on the show anytime, and if there's anything else we can do, you know, be sure to. I hope everyone really checks out your work and really appreciate it.
Thank you so much again, Alan and Will. Totally awesome, and yeah, I'm honored and happy to be here. Again, it would be great to go on for another hour or two, but at least we cover a lot of the basics.
In the future, I promise you, we'll have you back in the future, and we'll be able to go for a longer time. It's just because I'm in the process of traveling.
Yeah.
But I would gladly have you back for a longer show sometime in the future.
It would be great to talk more about Sirius in particular, because we didn't get to that too much in terms of why Sirius is important. From what I have found from that. I'm kind of glad we didn't have time to cover everything, because that way I don't give away all the secrets of the book, which I could easily end up doing. The main thing I would ask is just to be excellent to one another and party on, dudes.
Awesome.
Be excellent to each other. Party on, dudes.